Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. We got the Rex Rant coming up later this hour. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, normally on Thursdays. This Thursday is Thanksgiving, in case you were wondering. And he will be with us today on the program. We will get into all things Titans, all things NFL with Charles. So looking forward to that a little bit later in the program. Joe, speaking of the Titans, how much of Sunday's performance was maybe a shot in the arm for this fan base, who, by the way, just, again, we've talked about this a lot over the last couple of years, the combo Titans-Preds fan down bad right now. 32nd in the league in both. Titans are 1-10. So, again, no moral victories in the National Football League. I understand that. But at this point in the season, like, really what matters with this team right now is how good is Cam Ward? Is he making any sort of progress? And I felt like he made good progress on Sunday in the Seattle game. So I have seen, and we've heard from, I think some Titans fans that have been largely very skeptical of Cam Ward, particularly as the season has gone on, it's like, man, I don't know, that say, you know what? Sunday showed me something, and I've got a little bit more hope on the Cam Ward front than maybe I had before. Again, personally, Joe, I don't want to overreact to it. It's one game that he looked pretty good, who, by the way, they scored 3 points in the first half. So, like, it wasn't perfect, but he did throw for 256 yards. He took care of the football, and he made some plays throughout the course of the game, as we discussed yesterday, that demonstrated progress. So, Joe, I ask you, for this Titans fan base, realizing that they again lost the game, which is really what ultimately matters in the long run here, is how many games do you win, how many games do you lose? How much of a shot in the arm do you think Cam Ward's performance was for this fan base on Sunday, trying to look ahead and see if there's any sort of progress that's going to be made through the rest of the year?
Yeah, quite a shot in the arm. Unfortunately, today I'm locked out of the text line again. Apparently, I have to, like, every day run through hoops, go through the text line. And my YouTube chat just shows me a big arrow, so I can't get the reaction from people today. But I'm guessing that right now, I mean, I would say Titans fans are probably like feeling way better than Preds fan, like the combo fan, again, like they're just both in last place, but like Titans fans got some information that's like, okay, there's some hope. And of course, Preds fans keep going. They just, like, it gets worse and worse. So, I mean, if there can be separation between fan bases of two teams that are both like worst in the league, I think there is some right now. Now, go back to Dennis's text from yesterday, like, geez, you know, we're everybody's celebrating this, you know, this loss, and I get it. But that was probably the definition of like a moral victory, just because the team was so good. And again, this season, it we know what it's about. And at this point, you're towing that line. I think that a win would probably be good somewhere, like probably a good thing for this crew to get a win at some point. But they are, I think he's improving. There's some other players who are giving you some excitement, and then they continue to stay on course for the number one pick. I mean, that's sort of the balance you're striking right now.
Yeah, like, again, I think some people, which is what happens in these conversations with Cam Ward, are probably overreacting a little bit too much to Cam Ward's game yesterday. Just like some people have, I think, reacted too much when it's gone poorly for Cam Ward. Like, it's a process here. It's a long season. I don't think that Sunday's performance against the Seahawks necessarily means that he's arrived, right? Like, you've got to prove it over and over again in this league. So we'll see what happens on Sunday as they take on Jacksonville. But I do think there was a stretch, and we talked about it. Like, you know, there were one or two throws that Ward would make per week where you're like, yep, pretty good. That's good stuff there. That's why they took him number one overall. And then there was one or two or three sometimes passes that he missed that were just totally inexplicable that NFL starting quarterbacks can't miss. And that, it felt like we were in that cycle for a while, like a few weeks. It's like, all right, well, he's getting sacked a lot, as we talked about with Charles last week. Every week it feels like he's missing throws he shouldn't miss, and he's making a couple throws that leave you hanging on wanting for more. And I felt like we graduated from that on Sunday, at least for one game, where he didn't really miss that many throws that you felt like, oh, boy. Like, I could think of a screen pass to Tony Pollard where He sailed it, and I don't really know what happened on that play. But that's about it. Like, that's the one I could think of off the top of my head that you could qualify as a miss. Other than that, like, I thought he was pretty dialed in on Sunday. So, without having the benefit of seeing what it looks like for the next couple of weeks here, was that a launching point for him to close out his rookie year, given the circumstances around him are as bad as they are? Is that a launching point for him to make some progress here as the year goes on?
Yeah, you certainly hope so. It was a lot that, that Cardinals win, which though they gifted it, he did make a bunch of great throws late. That's a long time ago. And then, like you said, there was too many misses and negatives and minuses to go with the pluses. And in a lot of weeks, more minuses than pluses. I agree. This week it was efficient and made some of those plays. Made some of those off schedule plays along with good overall efficiency and accuracy and just good pocket sense, knowing when to go, stuff like that. So yes, this is a it's a huge it, you really want this momentum to carry over. You of course you expect there to be ups and downs, and we always talk about how it's not going to be linear. It's not just going to be this steady climb, but it would be a big deal to me for him to then, look, he's going up against another great pass rusher, this weekend, coming in here, the pride of Kentucky Wildcats football. But this week to me is like, can you come close to that at least? Even if you don't need to improve on it, but can you have the same kind of game the very next week? And then to me, it's like, okay, like clearly, then he is getting better. And that is really all you can ask for, especially considering the circumstances.
One texter says, do you think the Titans are starting to build their culture? Because I think all these rookies have whatever it is, the dog factor, the fight, and they're keeping Simmons by trying to build that mentality as well. Do you think the Titans are, Joe, using one of the those words in sports, the buzzwords, culture? Is that happening in front of our very eyes right now?
It's just hard. I just. They're about to get a new coach. They're about to get all new people in the building, So, yes, I mean, when it comes down to it, as any coach will tell you, you better have players who are leaders, who are dogs, who are great players. So, I think we're seeing a few more guys who we've probably feel comfortable like are going to be part of this moving forward, are going to be part of their long-term plans. But I also still think like the next coach is going to change a lot of things, and that's going to be a big part of it. And a whole bunch of new players coming in too, right? Obviously, this roster is going to turn over pretty dramatically, I think, in this offseason. So, kind of, I guess, like you definitely the new coach wants to come in and say, okay, who are my leaders? Who are my best players? And it does seem like Simmons has, although again, I'm hesitant to say, all perfect, great leader, he has ascended in that way. And I think if you're a coach coming in, you got to be able to lean on him. And you know what? A year ago, I would have said a coach coming in here probably he wouldn't have been one of the guys that you would have leaned on necessarily. So that's a good development.
Good stuff from Simmons last night. He got a front row seat at the Predators game. A lot of
Thanks for the help, Jeff.
losing that guy's either party to or watching going on out there. Feel bad for him.
Go to a
Showed
wrestling event. You
him on the
can't lose.
Jumbotron at the end of the first period. And I was like, Jeff, you might want to go home from this one. He might want to just take it on to the house, buddy.
He slam a beer?
Nope. And he just kind of looked up like, hello. How are you? So.
Tough night for the Preds.
Yes, it's a tough night out here. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, Wesley Clarkson says we had hope with Levis in his first year. Then he had a coaching change, and you saw what happened in his second year. Yes. Now, the coaching change has already happened very early in his first year. And as we've discussed, there are pretty recent examples in the NFL of a coaching change for a first-year quarterback that's worked out well. I mean, Caleb Williams looks like it's working out pretty well. Drake May, it's worked out well for Drake May with a coaching change after his first year. So I'm not saying that the coaching change is unimportant. Obviously, in a dream scenario, you don't want your first year quarterback having to deal with a coaching change, a play caller change. And oh, by the way, he's going to be on play caller number three by the time the head coach gets hired around here. We're going from Callahan to Hargreaves to whoever's calling plays for the next year. So clearly that's not ideal. It's also not as insurmountable as I think some people maybe make it out to be, as we're seeing right now in the NFL.
No, not at all. I mean, look, it's it, where he knows this. He knows this is the deal, you know? So I do feel like what Corey said yesterday, and we talked a little bit about, I feel like there's a little bit of a blueprint maybe being put out there by what they're doing. They seem to be doing a little bit more stuff that suits him. They've even talked, I mean, Mike McCoy's talked about, you know, he did this at Miami, did that at Miami. Sure, why not? I mean, and which doesn't speak well of, to me, of Brian Callahan and trying to be like, this is the offense. I mean, coaches who are like, this is the offense, you run it. That's not the right approach. So the next offensive group, whether it's an offensive head coach or it's just an OC, you know, with a defensive coach, you know, you can see some of these things on film and say, okay. I mean, people, you know, people are generally logical in this business, I think. And so I think these coaches, for whatever it's worth, I think they are doing some things that are helping him. And so then the next coaching staff should be able to take it and run with it. And, you know, I mean, he'll be fine when it comes to that. And like you said, a lot of times these things turn out better, and you just have to deal with that stuff. I don't think, you know, losing Bo Hardegree as a play caller is going to be a devastating thing for Cam Ward's career.
So, how much of a shot in the arm did Cam Ward's performance give Titans fans on Sunday? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. This Thursday, the NFL Game of the Week is the Chiefs taking on the Cowboys at 3:30 on 1025 The Game. NFL Game of the Week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Masero in 12 South. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. 1025. Throwing it out there, how much of a shot in the arm was Sunday's performance from Cam Ward? Now, Joe, as we've discussed, you take a look at some of the throws he made in that game and some of the plays he made escaping the pocket. Now, I don't know that he's ever going to turn into, you know, Lamar Jackson out there running around. But it was interesting to see him on the move and just how there's something about him when he's on the move that it just feels like he's really comfortable doing it. And, you know, you can use backyard football if you want. Like, it just kind of feels like there's a level of comfortability there. And Joe, I do think, like, there's, if you're going to win consistently in the NFL, there's a certain amount of just hitting the open guy, hanging in the pocket, making the throws that are necessary time in, time out, week in, week out, that you just have to have at the quarterback position. Otherwise, you're just not going to be consistent enough to win. But I think leaning into getting him on the move a little bit more, which is what a lot of people, including Kuharsky, have been just screaming about for weeks around here. It felt like whether it was intentional or not, he did it on Sunday and did it not just, you know, how many rookie quarterbacks, Joe, did we see come in, their first read's not there, and they panic and they take off? He didn't do that, and he doesn't do that. Sometimes you could argue like he waits too long before he takes off. But I thought it was the right balance from him on Sunday of hang in there, nothing's there, let's go. And I think that was good to see, maybe as more as much as anything else on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, and then you have, I think one of the best throws of the day was just, it was quick. It was a quick read. He had to sneak it between, you know, the middle field open, sneak it between the safeties, ripped one down the seam to Prochet. Like, that was a big time throw. I feel like it seems like his processing's got a little faster. And again, I think the biggest question is just being able to always execute the throws, but it looked good. It looked good Sunday. So, and we'll see. I mean, we've talked with Kaharski about like the off season and, you know, working on the mechanics, the footwork, all that stuff, you know, and that has to get better. I don't know how much better it can get. I think for some guys it does, some guys it doesn't, but the processing, the recognition, the feel for when to go all seems to be getting better. And I agree with you. As I like, if I'm the Titans, or who, if I'm the Titans in the future, whoever is coaching him, I am like, he's comfortable. He's comfortable when you move the pocket. I mean, when you have bad protection, moving the pocket is a strategy for that anyway. And he just seems to be comfortable. You can't, like you said, you can't make a living on that. There's a lot of in this league that's like, you know, it's third and seven, And it's just like you have to see it right now. You have to diagnose. You have to see what they're trying to disguise post snap. Okay, it's actually this. That's the picture, and you have to rip it. And that's if you can't do that consistently, it's I think it's hard to be a really effective quarterback in the NFL. But still, like there are a lot of different kinds of quarterbacks in this league too, you know, and different schemes that fit them. And so they're figuring that out. And again, whoever takes over, you're getting some stuff on film that should give you some clues.
Yeah, well, and also, we've made such a big deal about completion percentage all year. Against two pretty good defenses the last couple of weeks, it's gone up a lot. Now, in the Houston game especially, lot of quick stuff in the
Right.
Houston game because they were scared to death, deservedly so, of those two tackles coming in and wrecking the game. But you're talking about a 64.9% completion percentage against Houston. It was 66.7%. Against Seattle. So we're seeing some growth there. 6-1 an attempt against Seattle. He was only 5-2 against Houston. So that kind of tells you like it was a little bit less of just the quick stuff all the time in the Seattle game. Now, how much of that was also score? Again, one thing I keep bringing up in this conversation. They were down 30 to 10 at one point in
Right.
this game. So you do have to factor that in from the Seattle defensive standpoint. But, look, let's be honest here. We're looking for some positives. Looking for some positives with the Titans this year. He provided us with some on Sunday. And now we'll see against this total dweeb of a general manager and this weirdo head coach that they're playing on Sunday if he can keep it going and take down Duvall.
Man, I don't know that I don't know that Liam deserves to be roped into this stuff. Does Liam?
Duval. Yes, he
Yeah, I get
does.
it. Okay, you're right. Thank you. That's a good reminder. That's a good
Yes, he
reminder.
does.
I do
He
think he's
tried
a
to
pretty
fight
good
Robert
coach.
Saleh. He's a moron. Yes.
That would be that is that's probably one of the number one reasons why Saleh needs to get this job,
I
right?
agree.
Like we really need that energy around the AFC South. Like it needs some kind of a shot in the arm other than Indiana Jones. But yeah, where does that tandem rank for you compared to the Drinkwitz Beamer tandem?
Well, at least those like, the Jacksonville tandem probably actually smart guys, so that's good. The other two, I would not say that.
And we want him to be nothing more than him.
Although I'd advise them probably to talk a little less. That'd be something.
I still think Drinkwitz is a good coach, but he really
Even
screwed
though he
up on
botched that
Saturday.
game, yeah.
Yeah, he screwed it
Oh,
up.
he's a
He
good coach,
screwed it
but he
up.
botched another one.
He's better than Beamer, right? I
He
mean,
stinks out loud.
Beamer might be like Emperor has no clothes coach, you know?
Oh, he
Like
totally sucks.
he
Yeah.
might be that might be
But
ending
I mean,
badly.
I said it before the year, and I understand the year's gone the way it has. But I said back when they hired this goofball as general manager and Liam Cohen, the Duval stuff, better not lose Jacksonville this year. So here's your first chance. We've had to wait a long time. It's week 13 coming up. We had to wait a long time. But here's your first chance
And they
to take down these dweebs.
they beat Arizona, right, by field goal in overtime, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just despite what did Trevor Lawrence throw? I know they had four turnovers. Was
Think he
that
had
all
three
Trevor Lawrence?
picks. I
He had
think he
three
had three
picks and then
picks,
some
I
other
think.
turnover. No, he threw some terrible picks in that game. But yeah, they persevered and somehow, you know, overcame Jacoby Brissett. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're very good, but they are sitting there at what are they 7-4 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're actually right in that. So from that perspective, I guess if you're a Titans slash Vols fan, you know, this is spoiler weekend. Because if you're the Jags, you cannot lose the Tennessee Titans, not one
No.
time. You have to win both of those games to have any shot to get in the postseason. So this could be quite a spoiler weekend for the Titans Vols slash Vols fan.
It could be. And you know what? Cam Ward would build up a lot of goodwill with me if he just went in there and immediately smoked Jacksonville. I'd love it.
It would be fun to like get some, like, you know, some rivalry stuff going. It wasn't that
Yeah.
long, you know, it wasn't that long ago. We were like, Lou, look at the AFC South and look at like these quarterbacks. Like for a long time, it's going to be Lawrence, it's going to be Richardson, it's going to be Levis, and it's going to be
Stroud.
Stroud. And already two of the four are out of there, but maybe Ward and maybe Jones, you know, maybe there is a long-term quarterback quartet. The problem
maybe
is,
so.
You know, nobody looks all that good right now other than Jones. He's like the best of the bunch, which is, I don't know what to make of that.
Yep. No, I don't either.
So the AFC South basically stinks again.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We had the Rex rant coming up at 7:45. We'll get back into the Predators coming up next. Just a horrible performance last night from the Nashville Predators. They lose 8-3 against the Florida Panthers. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. If you're looking for a great spot to pregame on Sunday before the Titans game, stop by John Bon Jovi's and pregame with 1025 the game. JBJ's has the best food on Broadway, cold beer, and cocktails, stunning skyline views, including two epic rooftops. Pregame show brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works and Old National Bake. Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025 the game. We'll have the Rex Rant coming up here in just a few minutes. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us at 8 o'clock. We will get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. Joe, I said it earlier in the show. I didn't know how much time we were going to have on the Preds today as I was looking through the show plan yesterday before the game. Because I was like, Florida's in town. They've got their dad's trip with them. They've won two Stanley Cups in a row, even though they've got a ton of people out of the lineup. They're probably going to come here and win because that's what people do. They come in here and win against the Nashville Predators. But when it's 8-3 and it played out the way it did last night, I think we've got to discuss it. So, 8-3 loss to Florida last night. UC Soros pulled from the game after the fifth goal, which I think came about 22 minutes into the game. So, didn't last very long for UC Soros last night. I would say some of them not on him. Some of them you'd like to see your goalie make a save on that play. By the way, Soros is now 6-9-3 on the year, with a 308 goals against and an 889 save percentage, which is where he's at right now.
That's tough.
We went through the stats last night that Vengen put out there of the quality starts over the last 76 now starts for UC Soros, and he has 43 of 76 have been a good quality start rate. So quality start, for those wondering, as Vengen points out, it's saving more goals than expected. That did not happen last night for UC Soros. So, having said all that, you've got a goalie that has an 889 save percentage. It's in the first year of a 7-year contract. You have a team that's 6-12-4. And I said it last night after the game, and I'll repeat it here now. The 25-26 version of this team, completely hopeless. Like, it's not getting better. And I think we know that at this point. It's totally hopeless. They're bad. And they're likely going to end up being very in the thick of the conversation for the worst team in the NHL by the time the season comes to an end. That's where they are right now, is the worst team in the NHL. Joe, you watch all that happen. You get beat 8-3 by a good Florida Panthers team, but a Florida Panthers team that's also missing some very key players in their lineup. It kind of feels like rock bottom, to be honest. Like, you're just totally embarrassed at home last night. Your general manager has been talking all week about not firing the coach and how he needs more from the players. And the day after that article comes out, they get beat 8-3 at home. Stamkos and Marchessault barely played last night. Like, there's just so much going on with this team right now that's wrong. And this year's team, forget 5 years from now, forget 3 years from now, or whenever you think they may be good again. This year's team, it's hopeless and it's a disaster. That's a tough spot to be in late November.
Yeah, I think pretty quickly here. Look, I suppose the conversation about Brunette continues. That there's going to be people who continue to beat that drum. Look, I think it's very clear from what Barry Trotz did, what he said on our air, what he said to the Tennessean. He's not like, that's just not really, I don't think that's anytime soon. You know, I mean, it'd be kind of shocking, actually. Probably be a pretty bad look if you think about it, for all this conversation to take place. I don't think he helped himself with his comments in the Tennessean in particular about the players, but it'd be pretty, pretty shocking to me if now, like in a month or 2 weeks, he fires Burnett after all this, right? I mean, I think Burnett's going to be here. So I think now the conversation pretty quickly is just going to shift to who's going where. Who of these guys is going where? What can you get? You know, the thing about, we've already talked some about the Soros thing, the way he's performing, is he playing himself out of being traded?
I don't think they're going to trade it. I don't think it's ever even been on their radar.
You don't think that they would even consider it anyway? Yeah.
Nope. I mean, not based on everything he's talked about with UC Soros over the last couple of years. I don't.
Yeah. So again, like, I understand that everything from them is going to be, nah, it's not his fault. It's not, you know, it's never the goalie's fault, right? But I mean, it's pretty, when you think about like the start he had, which again was contrary to his nature to start like that, and how he's played since, it is the defense better or not? Because that's all, right? It has been, right? Like the defense has been better. He's been getting more support. I mean, what is going on? I mean, like that right there, while Askarov, by the way, continues to, you know, look like he's got some promise out there. I mean, it's, if you turn from every angle here and it's just like, oh my goodness, this is bad.
Well, at some point, like, can we not hold the goalie accountable at some point? Like, look, I don't want to revisit the Soros Askarov conversation at this point, because it is what it is. Like, they've made their decision. And by the way, Askarov just had an unbelievable month of November, or is getting through an unbelievable month of November. We'll see if he keeps it up. It's 1 month. We've seen goalies go on good stretches of play. We'll see if he keeps it up and what that looks like. But it looks like he's probably going to end up being a pretty good goalie. And I understand. Look, I understand the Predators are horrible, okay? I do. I understand that they're not good. We've talked about defensive improvements they make. Well, you could have fooled me last night. Like, they didn't play any good defense. Like, they're not a good team. They can't score any goals. So I get all that. He's in a horrible situation. But, like, at some point, can we stop making every excuse in the book for the goalie? Like, he's got an .889 save percentage. He's getting paid a lot of money to be an elite goalie. And the fact is, he's just not anymore. Like, he's not an elite goalie. Like, how much more of a body of work do we need to see? This is now 3 years in a row where you've gone from save percentages of .927, .918, .919 to .906, .895, and .889 right now, the last 3 years. Again, I realize it's more complicated than just save percentage, okay? I understand that. But it is part of it, right? Like, the bottom line is, he's 30 years old. You're in the first year of a 7-year contract, and it's looking like it's just not, the timing of it's not making any sense, and his play right now is not warranting the deal, which, by the way, is what we talked about this whole time in this conversation. So, it's just everything about it seems like it's just a horrible situation right now for the Predators.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I hate it for Soros. I mean, anybody who knows Soros, you know, you hate it for him. But also, yeah, this is why you don't do it. And I, look, another part of what Barry said on our air, another part of what he said, you know, in the Tennessean interviews, there's definitely, I don't want to say Barry's spinning things, but he's talking a lot about the future. He's talking a lot about young guys, and I understand that. It's very important. You know, he said he put up his farm, you know, his system against anybody else and stuff like that. Okay, that's fine. And if that bears out, then okay, then eventually things will get better. But then again, why the hell did you sign this guy if that's just what the plan has been? I mean, the Soros part of this is like, it's unspinnable. You can't spin it. It's a critical, critical error in all of this, because the timeline there, that just does not match the timeline. Again, if you thought Askarov was too immature, or you didn't think he was going to be good or whatever, okay. But again, that's the goalie, the young, cheap goalie who grows with the young team, who a few years down the road, now you might have something. You're sitting here. I mean, again, Soros may be past his best years. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to declare that for sure, but the trend, as you just laid out, is not good. What's it going to be in 2 and 3 years from now? Whenever the heck they're going to be competitive again. I mean, it's a critical error. And to me, it speaks to just doing things and not having a plan. I'm sorry, but these things don't all add up together when you consider the Soros contract in it.
Barry Trotz's general managing tenure right now is looking like a complete and total disaster. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It looks like a total disaster. I mean, the only thing at the moment that you're holding your breath on, which is, we'll see how long it lasts, but it's like, are any of these draft picks going to end up being good? Like, are they going to have a good nucleus here in a couple of years? And I don't know the answer to that. I like, as we've talked about, I like a lot of their prospects. How many of them are great players? Well, we'll find out. And how long is Bill Haslam gonna wait? That's the other part of this. Like, is we're pretty clearly heading to a time in this franchise where it's gonna take some rebuilding. And I know that they've wanted to avoid using that word, but that's what it's gonna take. It's gonna take some rebuilding here. So how long is that rebuild gonna take? And how long does Bill Haslam stay patient through all this with Brunette and with Trotz? But right now, I mean, look, at some point you got to call a spade. Like, it's been a disaster so far for the Predators.
Yeah, 100%. And if you're Steven Stamkos, and I don't want to make excuses for Steven Stamkos, but you see, this Barry Trotz comment in the Tennessean about, basically freaking score. I mean, we have Stamkos, Marchessault, freaking score. I mean, if you're Stamkos, you're reading that like, hey, Barry, could you give me a centerman possibly? Like someone at all who could help me score, right? I mean, so like to me, the whole thing, well, certainly it speaks to the sell-off is coming here real soon. I mean, we knew that anyway, but I mean, until that happens, I just can't believe that it'd be a very good feeling around that place right now after all that's taken place.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
There's no faux outrage. You're outraging me, mother farter. Shut up.
I do think you should be pretty nervous if you're a Vols fan.
Don't talk to me about that.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you.
Am I a clown to you, Mike?
I have a good relationship with Amy Adams Strunk, so I do not think it's my camera.
We're switching from one bun to the other.
She does not disrobe anywhere near me.
Take off your robe.
The lower area is perfectly covered.
How about my rant is me slapping you?
It is time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Speaking of Functional Medicine of Tennessee, they're offering a holiday special, a five-month functional medicine package, normally $5,000. You can get it for $4,000 plus an additional 10% off if paid in full. So make sure you keep that in mind. Joe Rexroad, I turn things over to you.
So many things, like they taken out of context, they just sound way worse, you know? Like if you put all those comments in context, I'm sure they were totally reasonable and it was a mature, professional conversation.
Always is.
Here on the program. Okay, I think we need to quickly get back to the Preds. But I guess this is another revisit, but I have to do this after a long drive. And I guess I would put this out to maybe Mark, for example, Mark from Nashville, a good friend of the show and listener who I know drives a truck. So I guess maybe he can help me with this. So maybe you don't do this, Robbie, but here's what happens for me if I'm on a busy highway and I'm coming up on a car that maybe I'm just going maybe a little bit faster than that car, but there are cars behind me that want to go faster than me, right? They're so when I get to that car, to the point of passing that car, I will accelerate a little bit, not crazy, but I'll accelerate a little bit, to go ahead and get past the car, get myself in the right lane. All you people, you want to go 88 on the highway? Okay. I'm a relatively, people make fun of me being a grandpa driver sometimes, but I go faster than the speed limit. I might sometimes flirt with 80. Okay. Some people like to go 88. Fine. So maybe I'm going 75. I'll rip it up to 78, 79, get past the car, get in the right lane, go ahead. For some reason, it just seems like in the truck driving industry, it's almost like pleasure is taken in a truck to the right is going 71. Like it has to be malicious that you are going 71.5 miles an hour and you get into the left lane and then you just make sure that it takes you about 20 freaking minutes to pass that truck. Now, look, I'm sure there's some, some people would say, well, I'm whatever my speed is, I'm not changing it. I would ask that maybe you would have a little bit of consideration, especially if you're on a two-lane freaking highway and there's about 30 cars that are just crammed together, just trying to go like 73, 75, yeah, just to move. But no, you're just going to sit there and burp, 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 and just take forever to pass one truck. It is infuriating. It happened so many times yesterday. It's just like, I can't believe that this is in good faith. I have to think that some of this is screw all of you. And you know what? I'm going to even slow down a little bit. How about that? And then maybe we can pull up right next to each other and then we can talk and wave, you lower the window and like laugh at everybody behind us. I asked for a little bit of consideration. I think most people on the highway, when they come up with a situation like that, they will go ahead and say, okay, let me get out of the way. You guys all want to go way faster. Go ahead. It's very hard, and I think maybe the holidays make it worse, to handle some of these professionals who I think are just messing with all of us.
My favorite is when you're coming up on the car, they're going the speed that they've just been going. They're just, putting long out there. And then they see that you're trying to pass them, so then they speed up. Oh, so we're just going side by side. And it's like a drag race at that point to see who can get out there and get faster. So I was like, oh, you've been going 64 over here the whole time. But now that you see I'm trying to pass you, you're going to speed up to 75. That's when I want to fight people.
If anybody does that who isn't like 16 years old, they should be slapped. Yeah. Like that's what a 16-year-old does.
Well, there's too many people on the phone. They get distracted. They're looking at the phone, and then they realize it, and then they speed back up.
Oh, God.
It's too much. That too. It's becoming more and more, for sure. And especially now that they have those like dash kind of things or clips where you can put your phone there. And there's so many of the, either Ubers or food delivery and all that kind of stuff, which is cool. We appreciate that. But there's just so many. And they have the thing right there and they're looking at the phone and they're clicking it. And it's like, my goodness.
I passed somebody a couple weeks ago that had one of those clips, and you could see them like watching a football game on there, driving down the road. I was like, here we go. Multitasking.
Oh, that's good. That's comforting. So I guess really I guess the moral of the story is try to fly.
Yeah.
Except that's awful this time of year too. So just stay home.
Just never leave your house at all. One texter said, Dean and O'Hicker says, drivers in Nashville just don't care. They think that they were bowing down to you if they get over that fast lane. It's ridiculous. Try driving 840 two times a day. It's bad around here. It's bad around here.
Yeah, well, I drive on 24 a lot, so I don't want to hear about any other highway sucking. Okay.
Joe, a lot of people mad about the Predators. I get it. Like I said, this year, you need to buckle up. It's going to be rough the rest of the way. I guess the most interesting part of the Predators in the very short term, forget, hey, they're going to land Gavin McKenna in the draft. I mean, forget longer term than that. But in the short term, it's like, when does the quote-unquote sell-off begin, right? When does it begin, and how many people are involved? Like, how many people can they actually sell? That's going to be very interesting to watch.
Right. The production dips don't generally help you, but what you can obviously sell is, well, we stink. And so this guy actually is still good. It's just that we stink so much that we drag this guy down. You could say that about a few of the people who I think are probably going to be on their way out of here. But again, it's just the, yeah, it's, I don't know. Like the goalie situation, again, I mean, I hate it for Saros. If this is truly an indication of like regression, because you said earlier, like you don't think that there's even a thought. It's hard for me to believe that they wouldn't get there at some point, especially if, like, you know what I mean? I mean, especially if there actually was somebody out there interested. But I mean, look,
I don't know that. I'm just basing that on what they've said about the goalie over the last 2 years. That's the only thing I'm basing that on.
I mean, obviously, if you went into, okay, we're going to deal Saros mode, that is another admission that you've completely screwed this up, right? But at this point, I mean, I think you have to try to do anything you can to fix it. Because I mean, look, that's great that they're excited about their prospects. And certainly, I think they have some promise there, some hope there. But you're, like it or not, you're headed toward being an absolutely 100% rebuilding franchise. So once you can see that, then I think anything should be on the table.
I agree. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Charles Robinson will join us coming up next, normally on Thursdays, Thanksgiving week. So Charles, kind enough to join us on Tuesday. We will get into the Titans and all things NFL with him coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.